Hey, everybody. I'm Riley, in case you didn't know. Or maybe you know me as Aunt Cool, or maybe you know me as that one time Justin wasn't on Sawbones. Today's my birthday. I'm 15. Caller. So since Sydney and Justin forgot, they decided they would give me the present of coming on stage and talking to a bunch of people I didn't know without preparing. So it was a bad present. Anyways, enjoy Sawbones.
Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
Everyone, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Do you guys have a message board where you plan this? Like, it happens every time.
No, that's nice. You got some applause this time. That was good.
I feel like we're really far apart. Yeah, can we scoot to go?
We usually, when we podcast at home, we're like close.
Yeah, and there's usually a baby like here, propped up,
right here,
like this.
And we're going
shh, be quiet.
Just a few more seconds.
Mommy and Daddy are making magic. Wow, what a thrill it is to be here in the home of Dragon's Den, Canada. I know this is silly. I didn't tell you. I put Kevin O'Leary and Robert Hershevek and Arlene Dickinson and Jim Sure Living on the guest list. I put him on the VIP, tried to give him a tweet like, hey guys, if you can make it out, that'd be great.
I can't believe they didn't. Are you guys here? They made it. No.
No,
I can't believe they didn't come.
It's our favorite show. When Sydney was pregnant with Charlie, we literally watched every one of them.
We had to like stream them on the computer. We had to like, download them on YouTube.
Somebody out there
is a hero because they've put every episode on YouTube. I don't know why, but they did it.
And they make little changes so they don't get caught by copyright protection. One was actually at a 35-degree angle. So we spent the entire episode like
this. We watched
every frame. But you know my favorite one is the one where the guy makes a cat TV. It's a TV channel for cats.
Right.
Yeah, specifically for cats to watch, like to entertain your cats.
Which, do you remember what was on cat TV? What do you...
Just Garfield, pretty much. No, I don't remember what was on cat TV, but I do remember he did not receive an investment. Surprising everyone, no takers.
But you know, Justin, it's funny you should mention cats.
Is it? Yeah.
Because the thing about cats, other than that, I mean, they're great. We love them. We have a couple cats that we miss. We miss them, I guess.
They don't know. They're fine.
That's what we like our cats.
We take care of our cats.
Yeah. It's just then we had a baby, and the cats kind of.
That's not true. We're very nice to our cats. but they claw stuff and they poop. I don't know if you guys have cats. Anyway.
They poop.
They poop all the time. What about cats?
But they also carry disease, and maybe we should talk about that.
Oh, that seems like a good fit for our program, A Marital Tour of Misguided Medicine. We are doing a themed tour for the Pacific Northwest. We're finally, after all these years, putting pets on blast.
And can I just say, too, I was so excited. I've never been to Canada at all before.
Yeah.
And as soon as we crossed the border, I felt like I could just, like, smell the universal health care. And it was such a good smell. It felt so good. I wish I could carry it home with me, so.
And by the way, speaking of Canada, I know there's a stereotype about you guys being nice, and everybody's been nice. The first, like nice, like just like super nice. But the first lady I interacted with at the hospital, I thought everybody was going to be like
no,
this.
No, at the hotel, not the hospital.
It was like, no, hotel, hotel. She was like self-flagellatingly nice. It was like every, after every request, she would cut me off with a yes, absolutely, before I could even finish. It was like, it was as if I was checking out a hotel room from Dobby. It was horrifying. I was worried that would be the par, but everybody's just been regular nice, so thank you. Cats.
Let's talk about cats. People like to keep cats as pets, and that's not a new thing. We have kept cats as pets for probably like 12,000 years. For a really long time. And the way we know that is that we found people who were buried with their cats. That's how much they love them. They would keep them with them and bury them with them. We know that the Egyptians were all about cats. I think most people like have that idea. They had the goddess Bastet, who had the head of a cat, and they worship cats, and they like cats. They would actually even mummify cats, mm-hmm. which I didn't know that. It was not uncommon to mummify your pets, but they found like whole cemeteries full of mummified cats. Like lots of mummified cats.
It's so weird the timing worked out that the pets died exactly when the pharaohs died. Don't break his heart. Just let him live in this lie.
I was reading this essay about cat mummies because I read that sentence and I thought that can't be right, that we mummified cats. And so I was reading more, like people write a lot about cat mummies, and there was this note like, it's really sad we don't have a lot of the cat mummies. They've been lost to antiquity, to people like stealing them. That's a big problem. If you, like,
yeah,
plunder
100%.
Cat graves.
If I come across a cat mummy, it's not going to a museum. It's going to the den.
There was a note that at one point they discovered, it was at like the end of the 19th century, they discovered this huge like cemetery with 180,000 cat mummies, and they shipped them all back to Britain and turned them into fertilizer and didn't save them.
What?
Which I don't know why that's your first thought. Like, look at, they're crazy. Look at all these cat mummies. These would make great fertilizer. Let's take them overseas to go do that.
Yeah, how bad is your...
your need for fertilizer.
How much do you need fertilizer? We're like, hey, it's Gerald. Listen, you got any... Listen, though, really, right, listen, right, listen. Do you got any cat mummies? Things are bad here, all right?
We probably started keeping cats as pets for a very practical reason. As we started growing things and we had like grain stores and things to protect from rodents, cats were very practical because you would have a cat and it would kill the rodents and you pet them and curl up on your lap, so they're fun too. And so for a long time, cats were like a good thing. Like you would have a cat and it was your friend and everybody liked cats. Except for in the Middle Ages, when we talk about this a lot, like things always got weird with everything.
Yeah, everything sucked in the Middle Ages.
And that was true about cats. For whatever reason, they became associated with like the devil and with witchcraft. And generally, if something bad happened to somebody and there was a cat in the vicinity, everybody blamed it on the cat. If you were a woman and you owned a cat, that was evidence that you were a witch. That was enough. That's all it took.
It's a low bar.
Yeah. In general, nobody liked cats very much because of this weird connection to evil things. And this actually may have contributed to the spread of the plague a little bit because they would kill cats, wipe out, just not have cats. Nobody took care of them. And so it let the rodent, you know, the rat population flourish. So they got us back.
Yeah. That does sound like cats, now that you say it.
There's a weird cat myth. Have you ever heard that a cat will steal a baby's breath?
Has
anybody ever heard this? This was, okay. This
yeah,
is something
but I,
like,
I never thought like, oh, I've got to get to the bottom of that.
Well, this is what I do. Like, why do we think that? There are a couple thoughts, because that's not a thing. There's never been any evidence.
Imagine my relief.
It's funny because it was noted several times. There's never been any evidence that cats like maliciously intend to murder anybody. Like, they don't set out to murder someone. I guess, like, one of our cats is huge, and so there was a time period where her laying, like, on Charlie would have probably been a bad situation. So we wouldn't let that happen.
It's bad enough when she lays on the stairs. Like, she's
a real
tripping hazard.
But there was never any evidence that they were, like, going after babies. But they probably thought that for a couple reasons. One theory was that babies' breasts smell like milk, so maybe the cat wants to, like, sniff near their mouth, and so you see that and think, I don't know why that's your first thought. Oh, they're stealing the baby's breath.
Because you're like an old-timey idiot. You didn't know.
There was a thought that maybe it was that you could observe that cats get a little jealous when there's a new baby, which I think that's a little true.
Yeah.
And so that was like the motive. Now we have a motive. Now we know why they did it. And there were also these weird stories, like this news story from 1791, where the coroner had declared that an 18-month-old had been killed by a cat sucking out its breath. And this would be in the paper periodically, which, how horrifying would that be if that was today? If you, like, have a cat and you have a baby and then you read that and you're like, what? Who? Why?
That would be a bad coroner, though, really, Sid.
Yeah, that was not a very good coroner.
I think that's your problem right there, if the coroner has that in their report. They should probably lose their position.
Now, we like cats a lot more now, but if you don't like cats very much, it may be because you're one of many people who suffer from cat allergies, and there are a lot of people who don't like to be around cats because they are allergic to them. And I thought this was interesting. You're not just allergic to, like, the fur and the dander, which I think a lot of people assume. You know, there's also stuff in their saliva that you can be allergic to.
Oh, really?
That's actually really common. There's a protein that we denote FeLD1, and it's in cat saliva, and of course they lick themselves, so then it's all over them. And that's a really common allergy trigger.
Hmm.
And what I think is interesting about that is that if you've ever heard of hypoallergenic cats, that's what they, like, it's a different protein. They still have that in their saliva, but it's slightly different. And so that's why they sold them, like, these cats won't give you allergies because this one protein is a little bit different, and so you'll be fine. And they sold them for anywhere from $4,000 to $28,000 for a cat that wouldn't make you sneeze.
It not make me sneeze. He better make me breakfast. 28 G's.
Unfortunately, as far as I can tell, they're not as hypoallergenic as Build. They may not be the answer to all your problems. There were a lot of people who got them and said, like, no, I swear, my allergies are gone. But when they did, like, head-to-head studies in a lab, they really couldn't, like, blind tests, they really couldn't replicate that.
The proof's in the pudding, folks. Cat allergies are made up.
So
you heard it here first. And probably last.
No. But my advice would be, don't pay $4,000 for a cat. In general, there are lots of cats who need homes that aren't $4,000. Get those.
Yeah.
Don't buy the $4,000.
Don't buy a $4,000 cat.
Now,
unless it swallowed $3,800. Then you can get it. That's a good deal, but that's a long grift. Ooh, you're playing the long game.
But so it's okay to pay $200 for a cat?
For a cat that can swallow $3,000? Let's come along once in a blue moon. The medicines that escalate
macabre for the mouth. Now, a lot of people, when they think of cat diseases, which you do often think about cat diseases, you think about cat scratch fever, right?
Sure.
You've heard of that. Or cat scratch disease, which, if you're ever going to look up on the internet things about cat scratch fever, just say cat scratch disease, or you're going to spend a lot of time hearing about Ted Nugent and not...
There are worse ways to spend an afternoon.
So cat scratch disease is actually, it's a bacteria, Bartonella henselae, and it's a very small bacteria, and it's very hard to grow. And so it took us a long time to fully understand what was causing cat scratch disease. We knew that there was something that happened when people were around cats, and then they would get sick, and they'd get, like, fevers, and they'd feel really lousy, and they'd get these swollen lymph nodes. It's like, it's always right here. There's a place where you get a swollen lymph node in your arm, epitrochlear lymph node. And we knew it had something to do with cats, but it took us a long time to grow the bug. And it can do really scary things. It usually doesn't. It's usually, it just goes away. It's actually not that big of a deal most of the time. You get sick, you get better, no big deal. We can give antibiotics, we don't have to. It's not a big deal. Now, there are really serious consequences that can happen rarely. But that's pretty much it. So you hear all this buzz about cat scratch fever and cat scratch disease. I hear that a lot. Like, people are scared of that. But it's really probably not that big a deal. But as I was trying to read and find anything interesting about cat scratch fever, I did find a really great description of the song Cat Scratch Fever.
Now, how specifically is this within the purview of Sawbones?
It's not, but it's much funnier than anything I could have told you about cat scratch disease, so I want to share it with you.
Okay, tell me about the song Cat Scratch Fever.
So this is a description of the song. I don't know who wrote this, but I love them. The song is about a man chronicling his long history of promiscuous sex and lamenting, or perhaps celebrating, his inability to control himself or the women he has sex with and vice versa. I think that's a wonderful description of the song Cat Scratch Fever.
Yeah, it's really all-encompassing and thorough. Like, you really get the whole thing.
There's this whole thing that he goes into. So, like, what was Ted Nugent singing about with Cat Scratch Fever? What is Cat Scratch Fever? What is he talking about? And there was this theory, I guess, for a while, syphilis was called, like, Cat Scratch Fever. That was the slang term for syphilis. So, okay, well, obviously, he's singing about getting syphilis, which made him really mad. And he was like, I can't repeat it because we don't do profanity on this show. But but it's not
about
syphilis.
Gosh darn it, you guys.
Where do you get off, rapscallions?
How dare you? I'm Theodore Nugent, and I say...
Now, a disease you probably don't always think about associated with cats, but you can get from cats, is a ringworm.
Oh, really?
Did you know that? Yeah. So cats can get ringworm, and they can carry it around in their fur. Your dogs can, too. But we're talking about cats, so just don't think about that. You can get ringworm from human to human or from cat to human. Now, ringworm is not a worm. I think most people know that by now. No. Ringworm is not a
one,
worm.
One might say 50% of the people on this stage don't know that. It's an unscientific poll, but I believe it's accurate.
People thought it kind of looked like a worm because it's round and like it's this little red, round, flaky area on your skin. And people thought, oh, it's a little worm under there. But it's not. And it's a fungus. And we knew it was fungus like 1850s. We've known this for a really long time. So why do we still call it ringworm? I don't know. But we do.
The name's already there. And maybe it will take a while for the rest of those folks to realize that it's not a worm.
Let me know when they do.
Okay, well, we have meetings, so I'll keep you up to date.
We used to think, so ringworm was this area of huge study at like the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s, especially in London, because it was infecting all these schools. It happened like right after in 1870, they made school mandatory, and so everybody was going to school, and it was just spreading a lot because there are all these kids like playing together and in classrooms together, and they're all, you know, dirty and rubbing up against each other or whatever, and so they all give each other ringworm, and it was associated, it was stigmatized. If you had ringworm, then it was thought that like you didn't clean yourself well enough, and your clothes weren't nice enough, and that you didn't eat enough vegetables. That was a big theory. Like, if you don't eat enough vegetables, you probably get ringworm, and you don't want to hang out with kids who don't eat vegetables.
Those are the coolest kids, 100%. Those are the James Dean of kids.
So the Board of Governors actually assigned these doctors and scientists to like look into the problem, come up with some solutions, let's figure out what we can do to stop the scourge of ringworm. And one of the solutions that they came up with was that there were ringworm schools where you just sent all the kids who had ringworm.
There are bad teaching assignments, and then there are bad teaching assignments. That's the one you definitely, definitely, definitely do not want.
And they were called that. Like, there was the Downs Ringworm School is what people called it. Like,
the Fighting Tigers or something? Like, a prestigious school for kids that don't touch other kids? Like, something. Mrs. Itchy School for Educational Advancement? Something. Anything is better than Ringworm School? Dag.
While you were at Ringworm.
What did Professor X decide to call his school the Ringworm School for gifted kids? Nobody would go.
While you were at Ringworm School, you wouldn't just learn things, you'd also get treated for your ringworm, which at the time was not necessarily pleasant. It would happen on the scalp a lot, and that was what was particularly hard to treat. If it happened on your skin, they would tell you just to put like some of your ink on it. Just dump some of your pen ink, and that'll probably make it go away. And because of some of the chemicals that it was made with at the time, it may have worked.
What? I mean, did they... Okay, wait, what? Why would they... Okay, they're at ringworm school. Can't they get, like, a medicine? Why do they have to, like, become ringworm MacGyvers? Just like, okay, this is what you have around you. You have ink. You have erasers. After lunch, you'll have a rectangular pizza. How do you use these things to fix your ringworm? Just give us some medicine, dog. Things are already bad enough. They're having a bad week. Please.
Well, they did give him medicine, but you probably didn't want it. Because if you had it on your scalp, first step is to shave your head.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Because the idea was that we've got to get rid of the hair somehow. So they would either shave your head or there was a certain rat poisoning that they would put on your head to make all your hair fall out. That was a very popular treatment. And then they would just keep putting like different chemicals on your scalp to keep it anything from growing. So basically things that would, you know, blister your skin and make your head hurt all the time. But after a while, they got an even more advanced treatment. In about like 1904, they started doing x-rays to the head in just enough strength to make all your hair fall out. That's a lot of x-raying. Like, some of you have probably had an x-ray. Did your hair fall out? No.
I'm just trying to think about how sports went at Ringworm School. I mean, they would be the champions, right? Like, every team would forfeit? Like, they would be undefeated every single season. That's what Friday Night Lights was about. Clear eyes, itchy skin, can't lose.
So they actually x-rayed kids' heads for ringworm for a really long time. There were like decades where this was the treatment. And an x-ray in the beginning would have been like 40 minutes long, where you just sit there and then your hair falls out and your scalp hurts for like 6 to 8 weeks. And then finally the hair grows back, but there's no more fungus. So the success rate was high, but obviously it fell out of favor after a while because, you know, radiation, and that's crazy. And it's just ringworm.
Would you have to transfer back to regular school?
No, you went back to regular school.
Do you know how confused you would be when all your classes weren't about ringworm? Excuse me, I understand the allegory of the cave. What I'm having trouble with is, how does this connect to ringworm? You'd be like that old man in Shawshank Redemption. You just want to go back to ringworm school. I can't live on the outside.
Now, we have limited time, but I want to tell you about one more disease.
Hit me.
So one question I get is there really something that cats have that can make you go crazy if you get it? Is there really some sort of really scary parasite that cats carry? And what people are asking me about is toxoplasmosis, which you may have heard. It's the thing that when you're pregnant, it's why you can't clean a litter box. Or it's the great excuse you have to never clean a litter box.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know how you've managed to keep that going since our daughter's 13 months old almost. But you've kept that perfect streak going of not cleaning the litter box ever. It's fine. It's not that. It's not a big deal.
No, Toxoplasma gondii. It's a little protozoan.
I'll show you
parasite.
How to do it sometime if you're curious.
That's so good. I'm really
just
good.
Scoop and dump. It's not that hard.
That's okay. I trust you.
Okay. Oh well.
You can handle
you.
It. Thank you. And they found this when they were dissecting something that was called a gundi, and I had to look up, what is a gundi? Because I didn't know what it was. And don't look it up, because they were dissecting them, and this just made me sad. They're adorable little rodents. They're these little African rodents. They're kind of like little hamsters. But they carry toxoplasmosis and leishmaniasis. That's how they kind of found them by accident. So stay away from them. But they're adorable.
But stay away from them. But seriously, super
cute. But they're adorable. You can also get it from other... We blame cats for this a lot, but you could get it from, like, uncooked meat. That's actually more likely if somebody gets toxoplasmosis. That's where they get it. And it can form little cysts throughout your body, different places, and little parasites grow in these little cysts. And you can get really sick from toxoplasmosis. Most people don't, though. And the reason we know this is... Okay, so everybody look to your left. And now look to your right. And now ask those people if they have toxoplasmosis. Because if they say no, then you do.
What?
Statistically, it is likely that 1/3 of the world's population carries toxoplasmosis.
Sleep tight.
They have found the cysts that they form, like, in people's hearts and in their skeletal muscles just after they died of completely other things, not anything to do with toxoplasmosis. They're just
terminal
there randomly.
Grossed outedness. Terminal
so you may
yuckiness.
Be carrying, you like someone likely, I might, or maybe you.
More likely me.
Somebody who rode in the van with us today on the way from Seattle is carrying
it. If cleaning the litter box is a contributing factor, it's definitely 100% me. I am the Typhoid Mary of toxoplasmosis at our home.
The good news is...
Patient zero.
The good news is most people are going to, even if they carry it, they're never going to know. You're going to be okay. It's usually more of a problem if you have a compromised immune system. But for the most part, even if you have it, you're never going to know about it. Rats that it infects, though, do you know it can control rats when they get toxoplasmosis and make them sexually attracted to cat pee? And it's the way that it gets to the cat. So, like, the rat is sexually attracted to cat pee, so it goes to where cats are, and then the cat eats the rodent, and then the cat gets toxoplasmosis, which is where the toxoplasmosis wants to be, which is terrifying, because the parasite does that.
You know I have to do another thing after this, right? Like, I can't spend my whole night just, like, gripping my head in sheer terror.
Here's the good news. Just if you, like, have cats. Cats are great. Own cats. Just, like, wash your hands. It's fine. Take them to the vet. Wash your hands. Everything will be cool.
It sounds like too much work. Folks, that's our time. Thank you so much for coming out. Thanks. Thank you to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. Thank you to Riley Smurl for introducing us. We really appreciate that. Thanks to the Chan Center for having us here. Everybody's been super cool and nice. Thanks to Vancouver and the whole country of Canada. It's our first time here in the land of dragons in Canada.
Yeah, this has been great. I remember so many times as a little girl watching Degrassi and Radio Free Roscoe and thinking, someday I'm going to go to Canada. And I'm just glad to be here.
Looks like we made it. Listen, okay, that's going to do it for us. Until the next time we have something to talk about, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.